Okay. Let's see. This is
start?
No, I just wanted to say something to start. This is the 8th of March, 1992, and I'm talking to my mother, Mary Heath Sweet, and I know you were born in Avoca, Iowa, a long time ago in 1905, and let's just start from there and talk for a few minutes and see where this thing leads.
Well, it was probably a snowy day on the day I was born, December 14th, 1905. In those days, snow lasted almost all winter in that part of Iowa. And we lived in a small house in Avoca where my family had moved from when they gave up farming here in Oakland, Iowa. And
Oakland is where? North?
Oakland is south.
South.
South of Avoca, about 14 miles. And mother and dad had, mother had always been on a farm, and they rented a farm and for several years. And my father couldn't stand the working in the hot sun, so they bought a small house in Avoca. And my father did carpenter work, and he also worked at the Avoca flour mill for the Consignas. And that's where Margaret was born. And and in 1902, and Avoca was the second town in that area. Previous to that, there had been a little settlement started about 3 or 4 miles south of Avoca called Newtown, and that's where my mother lived, was born, and where she lived, she and her family lived. And when the railroad went through that area of Iowa, the Rock Island Railroad, it went a little bit to the north there, and so the whole town was moved to Avoca.
It just bypassed Newtown. It
just bypassed Newtown, so they needed the railroad, so there wasn't much to move from Newtown. There's nothing left at Newtown now. The little rural school where my mother went has recently been moved to the park in Avoca, and it's being maintained as a pioneer school. But it was the same building that my mother attended. I don't think there was any store or anything, because my mother told about the group of men would get ready to drive over to Council Bluffs, and everyone got their long lists of what they needed. If you need some needles, you better buy them then, because there wasn't anywhere in Avoca to buy things. Avoca, during my childhood, was a town of about 1,200 souls. It was on the main line of the Rock Island, which we bragged about all the time, because we thought we were better than Harlan and Oakland, which were on branch lines.
And you were about 25 miles out from Council Bluffs.
No, farther than that.
About
40 miles.
40 miles,
about
really.
40 miles out from Council Bluffs. And the trains that went to Oakland and Harlan were little branch lines, the kind like you ride in now when you go to the place where they're showing off how people used to live. Plush seats and dust coming in. Cow catchers. And we often when we rode on them, the conductor would have to get out and scare the cows away, because they'd come up and but it was great fun when we went to on these trains. And when we went into Council Bluffs, which I don't remember ever going on the train as a child, except when I went into Council Bluffs, into Omaha for an operation, there had been a train wreck at Avoca. There were a lot of little round metal pieces, thin metal pieces about the size of a dime, and all the kids picked them up and we played with them. Played they were money. And I put one in my mouth and got it caught in my throat.
Oh, goodness.
And So the doctor in Avoca said he couldn't get it out and we'd have to go into Omaha. So my father and my aunt took me and we went into a hospital in Omaha to have the piece of tin taken out.
How old were you then?
I don't remember it. I don't suppose I was more than 2 or 3. And I know it was a Catholic hospital, and one of the nuns came out and asked my father if I'd been baptized, and he said no. Did he mind if they baptized me? They didn't like to give any anesthetic or do anything to a child that hadn't been baptized. Dad said, oh, that was fine. So I was baptized as a Catholic, and I don't remember anything about it, so I must have been very small.
And knowing your father, he must have been in a state through all of this.
Oh, he was in a state, I guess. And I guess Mother wouldn't have gone at all because of anything that was in the city she didn't like to even attend to. So, but anyway, I recovered very well. Happened. So, when my parents had moved to Avoca, soon after that the government opened rural mail routes, and Dad took a job as a rural mail carrier sometime about 1903 or 1904, and he continued being a rural mail carrier until his retirement. And it was gave a stable living, not great salary, but a stable
living.
When
did he retire?
He retired in 1924. Mm-hmm. And after that, he did a lot of odd jobs. They were having a strike in Omaha, very, very serious strike of some kind. And he had been a private detective at one time, and so he went in and got a job as a detective among the strikers, and went in on Monday and stayed a week, and came home on the weekend. And then he worked around. He was a carpenter, and he did a lot of extra jobs and so forth. And with his small salary, his small pension, we got along fairly well. So, next door to us in Avoca was the Southside School. There was a high school and combined with a grade school on the north side, but it was at the far edge of town, and the fathers of the town thought that it was too far for the little children to walk there. So they built this small frame building with 4 grades. Until you got through 4th grade, you went to this little school. It was right across the alley from us. Had no connection with any water or anything. We had an outdoor privy, and I don't know where we got water. There may have been a well, I don't know.
Must have been a pump or something, or else maybe they went next door to the neighbors to get water, possibly.
Thinking back on it, I think maybe water was pumped in, that we had water but not toilets.
Mm.
Because it seems to me, as I remember, there was a kind of a sink in the hall where the janitor got water. That's a little vague to me. So, but we had the 4 grades, and the playground was divided, boys' playground and girls' playground. And the boys had 3 times as much playground as the girls, which of course was typical of those days. And
they played harder.
right. So then when I got to 4th grade, we walked up to the high school, which was about a mile from our home, and I continued there through high school. That enough for now?
Well, tell me a little bit about, I don't know, roads and utilities and things like that. You I guess they were, had mostly dirt streets in the south side.
Well,
was there a paved, road through the middle of town?
No. There
no
were
paved
no,
road at all.
When I was small, there were no paved streets anywhere. And we did have electric lights over on the south side. We lived on the south side of town, close to the edge of town. Two blocks away were, was the town limit and farms right there. And at that time, they had a fire engine drawn by horses. And because we were far from the main firehouse, they built a little small firehouse just a block from our place, and they had a hand-drawn fire hose that you pulled, and we did have water hydrants in the street. So when Margaret was born, Dad was working at the flour mill, and he was up to the owner's house up in the far edge of the northern edge of Avoca, and the telephone rang, and the woman said, "Bob, see who that is, see what's happened." And they said there was a fire. No, the fire whistle had blown. She said, "See where the fire is." And so he said, "Where is the fire?" And the operator said, "At Robert Ochiltree's house on the south side."
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dad dropped the receiver and ran out the door. I don't know whether he told Mrs. Consigna where the fire was or not, but he ran all the way because Margaret and Mother were in bed. She had just been born. The fire was not extreme. It burned out Grandmother's room, but they saved the house. And saved, they carried the baby and Mother across the street. And so that was, not too long when I was still a little girl. We still used that firehouse with a hand-pulled fire wagon, and we had a firebug in Avoca. And all the men of the town got where they watched at night. They set up groups to watch where the fire would be. Fires usually were in a barn or in an empty house, not where anyone lived. And I remember about a block west of our house there was an empty house that had just been re-rented, and the fire engine blew, and this house was just blowing up in flames. Mm. And we finally found it was Mr. Leslie was the firebug, and how he got caught was he lived next door to his aunt, Mrs. Howlett, and she heard something out on the porch at night, and she got up, and there was her nephew lighting a fire on her back porch to burn her house down.
While she was in it.
While she was in it.
Was that the first one where he'd started a fire?
That's as far as I remember. It's the first one where anyone was living in. She said, she opened the door and she said, "What are you trying to do? Burn my house down?" So I guess he then got started very far, so he was able to put it out. But then he got caught, and he was the one that had burned. But it was a frightening time in the book. Everyone was watchful.
I imagine.
So.
Now you mentioned when you first were speaking about the fire that burned Grandmother's room, who all was living there? There was, of course, your mother and father.
Mother and father.
And sister Margaret.
Margaret and Grandmother.
Grandmother. And that's your mother's
mother. And
my
aunt.
Grandmother is your mother's mother.
Uh-huh. Okay. Grandmother
and
Randy.
Aunt Marty.
And Aunt Marty. And we lived in this little house. It was a 2/2 with a kitchen behind.
Mm-hmm.
And Grandmother had the one bedroom, and Marty
now
had...
Now, how old was Grandmother then?
Grandmother, I don't know exactly. She died in her middle 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she died... I was born in December 1905, and she died in June 1906. She had she had TB. And,
so you never really knew your grandmother.
I never
you
knew.
You were alive while she was there, but she didn't know her.
She never even held me because she was sick, and they didn't. They didn't want to. Dr. Spaulding had been. He knew she had TB. Even in those days, what'd you do? You just had TB.
Mm-hmm.
But Dr. Spaulding was a pretty up-and-coming doctor, and he he told them exactly what they had to do, that all of her sheets and everything she wore had to be washed and boiled separately.
Mm-hmm.
All her dishes had to be done separately so that it wouldn't spread. And so our aunt and mother took care of her until she died in June 1906.
Mm-hmm.
So I never knew her.
Of course, and of course, you knew Marty. Marty lived there.
Marty lived with us on and on most of the time. She went when her other members of the family needed her to work. She went and helped them when babies were born. And when I was small...
Is Marty your mother's older sister?
Yes, yes. She was next to mother in the family.
Next to mother, but older.
Okay.
I have all this written down, but
and
I just wanted to say it.
When our missionary aunt and M and Uncle Albert moved to Arizona.
Aunt Em was the one that went to China?
Yeah, she was a missionary.
Okay.
And she was having a baby, and so she had Marty come out to take care of her. She always had everyone taking care of her, but Marty went out to Arizona to take care of her when that baby was born, and I think she went when the next one was born also. And she always went to Aunt Alice's farm every summer to help with the heavy work in the summer. But she lived most of the time in
mm-hmm.
our house. And she did all of our sewing,
mm-hmm.
and she and mother shared the housework. Mother did a
That's
lot.
What I was wondering, is how did they divide up the work?
Mother did everything in the garden.
Mm.
Marty didn't garden at all, unless she might have planted some flowers now and then, but mother did all the gardening, and they shared in the cooking. So it worked out pretty well, and Marty sometimes worked for other people if they had a baby or if someone was sick, and for a while she worked in the Patrick Home, which was a hotel on Main Street, and she
mm-hmm.
worked, I think she worked in the kitchen, I think she cooked,
mm-hmm.
and worked there for a while. She would have made a wonderful nurse. She was so gentle and loved taking care of people. And also she was very loved to fix up the house. She always made the nice things. She always had vases of flowers and she did the delicate things
mm.
around the house. So.
Okay. I started off asking you about roads and utilities, and that led into all of that.
Oh,
you had, was there electricity in the town when you were born?
I don't know.
Of course,
when
you
I
don't
was
know
born.
When you were born.
There was electricity as far back. I'm sure there was electricity on the streets, as far back as when I was really little.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have electricity in our house until after we rebuilt the house when I was about 9 years old. And then we put electricity in.
And that's when you raised the roof and increased
raised the roof.
Made the extra
and
bedroom.
Made the extra bedroom upstairs and made some more room. And put in
about,
electricity.
That would be about 1914 then.
Yeah.
Roughly. That you
about
put in
roughly
electricity.
That, roughly that time, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And so it made the home. We still had no running water. The well was right out beside the house. Had lovely cold water, but it did have to be pumped. And when we built the house, we put on a bathroom, but we had no running water.
Mm-hmm.
And we would bring water in, and then we did have a stationary tub, metal, just a tin tub, I think, or some kind of metal. And Dad had made so the water could run out, but we had to carry it and put it in.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a
big improvement over the wash
over
tub.
Washing in the corner by the stove.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big improvement. One thing I remember so well when we were little, Margaret didn't like never liked the evening and never liked twilight. And she always wanted the lamps lighted, and so Mother would say, well, you two go outside, and when you see 10 lights, come in and I'll light the lamps. So we'd go out, anxiously look for 10. I don't know if it was 10, but a certain number, and then we'd come in another, like the lamp. The lamp was a bracket on the wall, and it had the reflector behind it so that it would be a little bit stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And we had little lamps in our bedroom, little tiny bedroom lamps that we'd light. We often just went to bed in the dark. So...
And what about a telephone? When did you get when was the telephone in town, and when did you get one?
Well, I guess the telephone was in town before I was born. I mean,
I would imagine.
Well, of course, when the fire was going
on. That's true.
Yeah. So I don't know how long it's been there, but but we got a telephone when, I don't remember, but Margaret remembered. She said, you remember when they came and put it in? She just thought it was so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so if she remembered, she was 3 years she older
was
than you are.
Almost 4 years older.
Almost four, that's right. So but she probably wouldn't have remembered it unless it was...
Well, it was such a shape.
After you were born or just before.
She wouldn't remember until she was about five or six years old.
Five or six, I wouldn't think. So you were probably already born. Okay.
Yeah.
So they probably put in the telephone just around 1910, maybe, just as a guess.
Yeah, that's a guess. I know it, of course, it was the wooden kind that was on the wall, and you turned the crank to ring in to the operator.
What was your code, do you remember? You must have had a ring code.
No, not when it was a private.
Hmm?
Not when it was a private line, you see.
You had a private line?
Well, yes, because there were no what did they call them? Lines. What did they call them?
Party lines.
Party lines, except in the country phones.
Oh, really?
There weren't any party lines, as far as I know, in town.
Oh, really?
But the country lines, you had 8, 10 people sometimes, and you had 2 longs and a short, and 2 sharps and a long.
No, that's what I was expecting.
But no, I don't think anyone. I don't think there were any party lines in the little town.
Mm.
So. The telegrams at that time were the way you reported to anyone deaths and illness. And you knew if you got a telegram that someone surely had died or was next to death. And I remember when a neighbor had died, and someone called to ask about them. My, what the flurry.
Hmm.
But you didn't use long distance for anything except tragedies.
You didn't use long distance for just chatting.
Oh.
Even when I was little, I wouldn't even
goodness.
Think of it.
No, goodness.
It was an emergency.
No.
Even in the
40s
and into the 50s.
After all, it's been, since you've grown up, that people have used the telephone.
Of course, the rates have come down so much in recent years.
Yeah.
But I remember when I went to college, I don't think I phoned home.
Oh!
Hardly ever.
Except one time when you were sick.
But
and
not
when you
generally.
Lost your wallet. Mm. But no, you didn't call home just to chat about anything.
Well, we were in the dormitory. We had one local university phone and one pay phone that you could call outside on each floor, and there must have been 20 to 25 rooms on a floor, most of them with two people, so in 40 to 50 kids in the dorm with one telephone.
So there weren't
not,
many
not
calls.
Not too many calls going
on. Oh, I was going to say about the streets in Avoca.
Mm-hmm.
There were no paved streets when I was little, and at the time, I don't remember the year, but when I was real little, we had 4 saloons, and we had a lot of drunken people, but Iowa went dry, and so the saloons had to be closed, and that was when I was still quite a small child. But we had no paved streets until there again, I would say, when I was maybe 10. In about that age, maybe. They decided they would pave 4 blocks, I think, uptown. Main Street, and I know everyone went to watch. It was a brick pavement.
That's what I was going to say, it was paved with brick.
Brick pavement, and the man was absolutely fantastic. He laid bricks so fast. So that was the show all that summer, to go watch the streets being paved. So we had, well, I guess maybe it was more than just the Main Street. It was several streets right around the main part of town. And I think it continued up around the high school and so forth. But that was the first paved streets we had. And
probably didn't get paved in the south side for some considerable years.
No, I don't know when it was paved. It never was paved while I lived there on the south side, except maybe the main street extended down to the fairgrounds. It might have been paved. I don't really know for sure, but our street was never paved.
Yeah. Now, you lived there and graduated from high school and then started teaching in the country school, and I guess we'll get into that another time.
Right, I think maybe.
But the... So, let's see. So that would have been when you graduated from high school, must have been 1924.
Mm-hmm. And then... And in that year, that summer, Mother and Dad moved to Council Bluffs.
Okay, so that's
when I stayed in the country and taught at Buzzard's Glory.
At Buzzard's Glory, mm-hmm. And lived with the Derbys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then... So that's when they moved to Council Bluffs,
mm-hmm.
and sold the house in Avoca.
Yeah.
And up to that time, they hadn't paved any streets and had not put in any indoor plumbing or anything. Or did plumbing ever get put in?
Yes. And some people had it. Usually, now, right across the street from us, the Zollers lived, and they were German farmers, and they had made good farmers and made a lot of money. A lot for those days, and they bought an old house and restored it, made a beautiful house, and they had plumbing in their house.
Was there town water, or was this plumbing?
Yeah, it was just town water.
I see.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Town water had been over there for a long time because at the time the fire was, they put it out.
Mm-hmm.
The town water.
So they had a fire hydrant out
somewhere.
Yeah,
right on the corner from us.
You could.
Mm-hmm.
You could sign up for it if you wanted it, or you could keep using your well, I guess.
Yeah, and I was trying to think when the sewer, of course, had to be there when people had, I don't think they had a cesspool. No.
I would think once they got town water,
they put in
a town sewer too.
Yeah. And the new houses, but not many new houses were built on the south side. It was the poorer part.
That's on the wrong side of the tracks. The tracks did, in fact, go right through the middle
and
divided the south side from the north side. Hi.
Right.
Admiring comments accepted only.
Okay, let's see. Well, we've been talking a good bit about Avoca and so on. I'm not sure where to go with this next, but why don't we talk about the country school for a little while?
Oh.
We've talked for another 15 minutes or something. You can talk. The school there that was northeast of Navoca, if I remember correctly, was colloquially called Buzzard's Glory.
Yeah, because...
And you lived with a family of
Scott
Derbys.
Scott and Marie Derby, and they're 4 and a half children.
4 and a half.
And the reason they called it Buzzard's Glory, when they were building the school, the buzzards just came and roosted on the roof all the time. I think it was actually Knox County number 6 or something. That was the name of it. It didn't have any real name. And
it wasn't Pottawatomie County?
It was Pottawatomie County, Knox Township.
Oh, Knox Township, okay. Mm-hmm. Knox Township.
I had never even, although I'd lived all my life in Iowa, I'd never been in a real rural school, one-room rural school. And I certainly came ill-prepared to teach the youth of America. I was just 18 years old, and
some of your students were probably 19.
very inexperienced, had led a very, very sheltered life, and no real education.
You must have started teaching right out of high school.
Right out of high school.
Okay.
We had had, if you were planning on teaching, you had to take two courses the last senior year in high school. One on methods. I don't remember what the other was. That was our preparation. And fortunately, we had a wonderful teacher, Ethel May Taylor, whom you probably remember came to visit us.
Yeah.
And she was the one, when I told you she was coming for you to behave, you said, "You mean she isn't dead?" Because you thought that anyone that had taught me in school would certainly be dead. But you went in, out to the rural school with no preparation other than giving them. I had all 8 grades, one or two in each grade. I had about 27, 28 children.
You had 8 grades. The high school age kids went into
the ninth grade, went into the VOCA.
To VOCA, to the high school. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that the high school was for the whole county?
The whole county. Well, no, not for the whole
county. Not for the whole county.
It would be for that area.
Okay.
I don't know how much it included, but no, it was just...
But it was a VOCA and the
And there was no bus transportation. If your children went into a high school, it was up to you to get them there. But the little school I went into, well, it had the seats and a desk for the teacher and a stove in the middle of the room. The well was no well on the school grounds. The children had to carry water from the nearest farm. And I imagine it was quite clean by the time they got it there. And they had a kind of a container you put it in. It had a little push button on the bottom. You could get water. You didn't dip it with a dipper. Although the next country school I taught in, they had a dipper sitting in the bucket of water.
Everybody just drank out of the same dipper?
No, they didn't drink out of the dipper. They weren't supposed to.
I bet some of them did.
But I'm sure that most of them did. And that also you had to go down the road a piece to get water. There were no books in the school at all. Books were bought by the parents. And of course, the family that had the number of children, they would have had the books at home, and of course, the children would have, they had no other books, so the children would have, by the time the little children came along, they would have known all the stories and everything in them. So it wasn't anything fresh that you had to offer the children. There were no books at all in that school. Hmm. Not even, I think...
You didn't have slate to write on. You must have at least had paper.
No, we had paper. And the we had double seats, two sat at a desk. And the teacher sat a little elevated up on a little front of the front of the room. And there were two privies in the backyard, boys and girls. Shall I tell about the boys' privy?
Oh, I was going to say,
boys'
privies are always a problem.
Well, do you want me to tell about them?
You should tell about them.
Well,
part of the story.
I didn't know that teachers had charge of the privies. I thought you went to the privy, but you didn't have charge of it. And some boy sort of was complaining about the privy to other kids, and so I decided I better go up and look after school. Well, the boys had not used the holes in the privy at any time, and oh, it was the most awful mess you ever saw. So I called the director of that school, and I said, was I supposed to take care of that? He said, I wouldn't have you clean that up. He said, I'll come down and clean it up, but then you talk to the boys about it. So I did talk to them.
Rather firmly, I imagine.
And I checked every day after that, and if there was any misbehavior in the privy, I kept the boys in and gave them a piece of my mind, punished them. So... But what, I had no idea the teacher was supposed to check on that. So I
the teacher is janitor and fire stoker.
Yes,
and
yes.
Everything.
Yes. In fact, the second school I went to, the director.
This is Limekill Hollow.
Yeah, Limekill
down near,
Hollow.
Closer
yes.
to the council block.
Uh-huh. Limekill Hollow was really, the proper name was Orchard Heights.
Put your hand in front.
But there was a Limekill, and so they called it Limekill Hollow. And I went to apply for the school. The director lived in a log cabin with his family and several children, and a long beard, which men didn't wear at that time very much, younger men. And he only asked me two questions. Well, he asked if I had a certificate to teach, and then he wanted to know if I could teach geography and if I could light a fire. Those were the two things. I said yes to both.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
He was the director of the school?
Each country school had a local director, one of the farmers. So, local director. So...
was there an overall school board that directed a group of schools, or
the
how did
county,
that work?
County supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
County supervisor had charge of all the rural schools, and Pottawatomie County was quite a big county, and the county supervisor was supposed to make a visit in each country school at least once a year, so you lived kind of in dread of the county supervisor coming. She never came to Buzzard's Glory, and she came once when I was teaching in Limekill Hollow, and on the Buzzard's Glory School, they had a storm cave out in the backyard, and I lived in awful fear that we would have a tornado and I'd have to take all the kids down into the storm cave, and then that the school would blow over on top of it and we'd all suffocate. So it was just a hole with a cover on it. Did have an air hole coming up, but I never had to do that, but I was scared about it.
You were pleased at that.
Mm-hmm. The Derbys lived a quarter of a mile from the school, and I had the three of the Derby children were in my room. And one time I got to school and I had a terrible headache, an awful headache. And of course in those days I didn't carry aspirin or anything. So I asked Ned, one of the Derby children, if he would walk home and I'd send a note for his mother to send me some aspirin. And I had an awful time swallowing aspirin. So I wrote a little note and said I had a terrible headache. Would you send me some aspirin and some jelly to put it in so I could swallow it?
Hmm.
So I sent little Ned home, and I think later how you never could have sent a child home later without letting everyone know, because you'd be sure something would happen to him.
Well, you'd have to have the principal phone the parents and
right.
have somebody accompany him, probably.
Right. Later when I was teaching in last years I was teaching, we couldn't even take the children on a walk a few blocks around the school without parent.
You're
permission.
Speaking now when you're teaching
that,
in Arlington.
Yes.
And this was
in the 1950s and 60s. So.
Yeah, times have changed.
Right.
But you could take the, if you didn't feel like teaching that day, you could take the kids blackberry picking or something if it was the right time of year.
Yes,
or
at Buzzard's Glory there wasn't much to go do, but at Limekill Hollow it was bluffs and hills, and in the spring when the wildflowers bloomed, we just took our lunches and went roaming up in the hills, and the parents didn't know that we were. It kind of scares me to think about it now.
If someone had come by the school and no one was there, they wouldn't even know where to look.
No one by. I had a child break his collarbone at Limekill Hollow, and he was in great pain, and so I sent a child running to the director's wife. She came over, and we knew right away that his bone was broken. So she said, well, I'll call the clinic in Council Bluffs, and you get him in the car, and I'll stay with the children and send them home later. Well, I think now how scared I should have been taking that child with a broken collarbone, driving all the way into Council Bluffs. Take him to the clinic.
Well, what were your alternatives?
Right,
call in
that's
a
right.
medevac helicopter? I mean. Mm-hmm.
So I remember how embarrassed I was. The child came from a very poor family, evidently they'd never paid their bills, because when I brought him in and gave him name and everything, and she said, well, you haven't paid your bill. I said, I'm not the parent, I'm the teacher in the school. And so they allowed us how they could fix his collarbone since he was suffering.
Oh, that's great. What, did you lived at Limekiln Hollow too, part of the
when
time.
When it was bad weather.
In the winter.
But you traveled back and forth. I drove back and forth until it got, you had to go over this hill, and that all, in the winter, that filled up with snow. And so I had to stay at the, at Pascal's. And that was the house that was built into the side of the hill. And it was just one big room with two partial partitions, not to the top. And sometimes a cow would walk on the roof, scare you half to death at night. They were nice people, though.
This wasn't the director or anything.
No.
Who was the director?
I'm trying to think of his name. It escapes me right now.
You were living with your parents in Council Bluffs
mm-hmm.
when you were teaching at
yeah.
Limekiln Hollow, except for in bad weather.
Yeah, so.
And what about Margaret?
Margaret had gone to Council Bluffs to go to business college, and then she got a job down there. And that's the reason Mother and Dad moved to Council Bluffs, because they couldn't stand their children not being at home. Couldn't stand not having their children at home.
Oh.
And Margaret didn't like being away, living in a room. But after they moved down there, then Mother just got after me that I couldn't teach way out there at Avoca, because if I got a school near Council Bluffs, I could be at home. So did
Margaret live at home
Margaret
also?
Margaret lived at home, yes.
Mm-hmm. What was Margaret doing? Was that?
She was a stenographer.
Was that when she worked?
I remember
when we were in Council Bluffs, there was this big brick office building.
Yeah,
there.
She worked as one of the old-time lawyers, Mr. Stewart. She worked for him. He was really a demon, but she worked for him there. And Margaret was responsible for a lot of our moving about, because she had begged the Mother and Dad to move to Council Bluffs, and then she went to California and begged them to move out there, which of course was a mistake.
Well, that was what I was trying to get at when she had moved to Council Bluffs. I was wondering whether it was more Margaret wanting parents to move down, or your parents wanting Margaret to be at home.
Yes, Margaret was very convincing. And Margaret had, of course, Mother couldn't send her down to Council Bluffs to go to business college alone, so our aunt went down, and they got a room in a house.
Aunt Marty.
Okay. They got a room in a house where they had a little kitchen, electric plate.
Hot plate.
In the bedroom.
Yeah.
And Margaret lived with Marty there. And then after she got a job, Marty still stayed. Mother didn't want her to come home and leave Margaret alone in that wicked city. So Margaret, they got a little bit more roomy place where they had a little, it still was a funny place, just an upstairs of a house. And so Margaret began to get very antsy about living it with Marty, because she wanted to be on her own. And she always said, the reason she didn't want to keep on living with just Marty, she was having to help. You see, Mother said, if she's working, she'd have to help pay Marty the food and things, so it was expensive. So that's when Marty begged the family to move down there, because she thought it would be better than her. So then, of course, she had to develop some way of getting away from home without her family. And so she developed illness. She had bad colds all the time, which I guess she had. And she went to the doctor. And I really don't think this is true, but she said the doctor said, maybe the doctor did, said that she should get to another climate. The climate was causing her to have these bad colds. And of course, she went out to visit San Francisco. No one would ever go to San Francisco to not have colds.
But I thought San Francisco was sort of damp all the time.
Margaret loved San Francisco, and so she told.
Damp, and it's never warm.
She told.
She
told mother and dad that the doctor said she should move away, and so she was going to move out to San Francisco. They didn't question it, and so she went out there and got a job. And of course, as soon as Margaret was away from the family, she wanted the family. Then when she had the family, she didn't want them. So she was living around in rooming houses and having an awfully good time. But she liked things about home too, you see. So first she wanted me to come out there, and well, mother didn't go along with that at all. And of course, I being docile, I didn't fight it. And so finally she said it would just be so fine for the whole family to move out there. And it was a big mistake. They shouldn't have gone at all. Of course, they should never have left Avoca.
They'd probably been better off in Avoca than
anywhere
else.
In Avoca.
If they'd moved to Council Bluffs, they'd have been better off to have stayed there than to go to San Francisco.
And of course,
lived in Los Gatos. Right.
Yeah, later. Well, that's how Margaret got rid of being in the family again. I sound like Margaret was, I tell these bad things about
manipulative,
her.
Manipulative, would you
say? She was manipulative. She was, I must say that I had two people devoted to me in my life. One was my husband, and one was Margaret. I never had such devotion. And Margaret and I had wonderful times together.